the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
I feel like I've heard from every expert. I've actually heard from every direct source. Well, but one. We've heard from Jerry Reinsdorf, Michael Jordan. We've heard from Phil Jackson. We've heard at least in text from Jerry Krause. Why did the dynasty end when it did? 10 hours of documentary, and I don't know. Maybe I'm stupid or something. I don't feel like I have a good answer to that. Let's ask one more expert. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. Coming up in this hour, let's vote on the best of the road trip movies. First is to be awarded. Last has already earned his place. That and what's it like to be Michael Jordan's kid? That's all coming up in the final hour of the Will Cain Show. But why did it end when it ended? Why did it have to end when it ended? Let's ask ESPN NBA insider Ramona Shelburne, who's on our phone lines. What's up, Ramona?
How you doing, Will?
Good. I've watched the whole thing, Ramona. I mean, all 10 hours. I did a little extra reading, and I've been a fan for years. I don't feel like I can get my arms around it. I mean, I hear Reinsdorf talking about salaries and financial suicide. I've read Krause talking about egos and injuries, and I hear Jordan saying, nonsense, we'd do it another year. But I don't feel like I've ever been able to say, okay, hammer, nail, pen it up on the wall, this is why the Bulls dynasty ended when it did.
So here's what I think. I think Michael Jordan is always going to say, I think we would have won 7. Everything that you and I have just watched over the last 5 weeks, doesn't that tell you that this man always believes in himself, right? I mean, like, you know, he's standing on the dais with Phil Jackson after they win, right? And they, and you know, what does Phil whisper in his ear? That was really great. And Michael says, I always believe we would do it. I always believe we would win, right? I mean, that's Michael. Michael always thinks that if I'm on the team, we got a shot. And I think that Michael is, you know, I don't want to use the word delusional or anything like that, but there were real reasons, there were real cracks in that foundation. And a lot of times, you know, you don't see it because the end result is that you won. But like, that team was on its last legs. They were gassed. You could tell Michael was just carrying them, right? And Pippen can barely make it through the game because he's got a back injury. You know, a lot of other guys were going to have to get paid. Now, I know the financial stuff that Reinsdorf and Jerry Krause are talking about. I get all that. I don't buy that because I think we live in an era now where you say, well, if you have a chance to win a championship, you spend whatever it takes, right? And the Bulls already had the highest payroll in the league. $61.6 million, and I think the salary of Will was 26. Okay, so they were three times over the salary cap. There's no luxury tax, but you know what? You make that all back in playoff revenue. Okay, you make it all back in goodwill and going for 7, whatever it is. I just think that they looked at that team and just said, we were lucky to get this one. Like, this team, the guys in this team, the legs we have, their bodies, like, they just couldn't go any further. And I think Michael is defiant to the end and just has this incredible self-belief in himself. But I kind of tend to agree that they wouldn't have been able to come back and win another one.
Ramona, we actually lost Will. We're working on getting him back. But yeah. one of the things he's also been kicking around is, had Jordan not retired briefly to play baseball, do you think he would have been able to continue from the initial three-peat and win championships all the way through there?
No. And I think that's the big thing that we've felt in watching this story, which is simply, you know, Michael burns so brightly, and that hunger that Michael Jordan has just goes so deep that he gets burnt out. I mean, I thought that story that Mark Bansal, who wrote Rare Air, who's a, you know, Jordan biographer and really knows him very well, that Michael had told Mark Bansal after the 92 Olympics that he was fried. Like, the only reason he was coming back was because they had a chance to win 3 in a row and no one had done that. And that would put him above, people have done it, but they hadn't done it. That would put him above Larry and Magic and his contemporaries and Isaiah, right? I think every 3 years, I just think he was fried. But like, I think he needed that break. I think just mentally. And then he comes back and they have a different hunger and they have a different energy. And I mean, all of the guys talk about it, which was the first year there was joy and all that. But each year afterwards, there's relief. And I think, you know, each of those years of the second three-peat, there's joy. We're punishing people because they lost the year, you know, when Michael came back for the year that they lose to the Orlando Magic. But I just think there's a cycle to this. I just think there's a burnout cycle that everybody involved recognized. And, you know, I even think Phil Jackson recognized it. I think he probably could have been talked into coming back if Jerry Reinsdorf fires Jerry Krause. I don't think there was any way that Reinsdorf could have convinced Phil to come back if Krause was still there. And Phil felt loyalty to Krause, even with all the issues that they had, because Krause had discovered him and, you know, Krause had given him an opportunity. I really think the only way that team continues is Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner, says, sorry, Jerry Krause, thank you for building this. I think you're a great GM, but these guys all want to come back for one more year, and I got to choose the players and the coach over you. I think it's the only way they come back. But even if they do, I don't know that team wins again. I just think that they were gassed.
All right, it's the Will Cain Show. We've lost Will. We're working on getting him back right now.
We're talking to Ramona Shelburne right now.
So hopefully we'll get Will back here in a second.
Yeah.
Will had mentioned his favorite part of the documentary was probably just the point of Michael Jordan was just always present. That was the kind of thing he took away from it. What was kind of the one thing you took away or your favorite thing of the documentary?
Well, you know, I knew Phil Jackson in Los Angeles when he coached the Lakers with Shaq and Kobe. I did not know him as coach of the Bulls. I was like in high school and college at that time, and so I watched it more as a fan back then. And so it was just great to just relive all of that, but knowing all the dynamics now from a different perspective. Right. And I think I compare it a little bit to covering the Warriors the last few years where you saw, you know, the turmoil created by Draymond Green, right. Or the turmoil created by Kevin Durant and whether he was going to leave or not, or Draymond Green with the sort of volatility. And then there was the fatigue of, you know, five straight years to the finals, playing deep into June. How do you keep that hunger? How do you keep that fire? Like, I've seen that now as an adult and as a professional covering the league. I cannot even imagine what it must have been like to go to, you know, to win six titles in 8 years. That is just, you know, mentally, spiritually, physically draining. And I think the one thing I took away was how empathetic Phil Jackson was in understanding those guys. I mean, that scene last night where Dennis Rodman goes off to Detroit to go wrestle Hulk Hogan, right? That was amazing. Like, you know, Phil, on the one hand, is totally upset, has to be upset. You disrespected us, right? What does he have the scene where he says it to the team, you know, and he kind of has to make Rodman atone for it. So he puts it out there and there's consequences for it. But he also knows that he can't just squash Rodman and he kind of understands who Dennis is and why he does things like this. And so the way he walked that line, I can't believe it, you know, and the empathy that it took to manage those personalities in and of themselves, let alone in the circumstances they were in.
Ramona, there was a poll recently. We're still working on getting Will back. He was popping in and out here. But there was a poll recently by ESPN where 73% of fans concluded that Michael Jordan was better than LeBron James. Do you think LeBron's going to have a chip on his shoulder at all coming out of this documentary leading into the next NBA season?
I don't know. I think he already had that chip, right? Like, to me, this year for LeBron reminds me so much of what we just saw when Michael took the year away. And then he comes back and doesn't really have his legs. And they lose to the Magic in the Eastern Conference Finals, right? And Michael calls Tim Grover, his trainer, and says, you know, we're starting tomorrow. And he goes and films Space Jam, and they have the Jordan Dome, and they have these epic practices against, you know, pickup games against everybody. I mean, that's kind of what LeBron did this year. This is very similar to the LeBron James summer and trajectory of this past year, where he gets hurt. He's not himself. They missed the playoffs. Like, everybody's kind of shuffling dirt on him already. Like, he's done. Like, oh, is this the beginning of the end for LeBron? And LeBron is off filming movies and cares more about, nope. This man is having one of the best seasons of his career this year until we had this interruption. And so I don't think LeBron feels like he's ever going to catch Jordan. I don't think anybody you know, can catch him. I think by the end, Kobe even realized that. Like, I remember covering Kobe and asking him about it and talking to him about it. You know, especially when he passed Jordan on the all-time scoring list, there was this sort of like recognition that Michael really is just the greatest. And, you know, they're all just chasing him forever. But what I think LeBron would tell you is the impact he has on the world at large is different in a way, in that I think LeBron's legacy is going to be defined as much by his willingness to engage in social issues, political issues, and off the court as it is on the court.
All right. Appreciate it, Ramona. We're still tracking down Will, so thank you for coming on, and we'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Hey, way to go. Look at you driving the show. I like it.
Hey, Pat,
it worked.
Pat and I tried. We tried our best. All right. Thanks, Ramona.
Have a good one.
All right. It's the Will Cain Show. We're still working on getting Will back, but in the meantime, we're going to hopefully crown the best movie from the weekend. Sadly, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles already came in last. Sorry, Mike. So next up, hopefully we'll get Will back, and we'll do the best movie from the weekend. That's coming up. It's the Will Cain Show, ESPN Radio, ESPN app.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social security? Is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag. Done.
GEICO. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Napa know-how.
At Napa, we've stopped thinking outside the box. Instead, we're thinking inside the bucket. The $2.99 Napa bucket, to be exact. When you fill those bad boys with auto parts, you can get 20% off three or more items that fit inside. No overthinking required. Just get your bucket, fill it up, and save 20%. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa auto parts stores, exclusions apply. May not be combined with other offers. Offer ends 7/31/20.
I hate to disappoint you, but guess who's back? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Think about the word intimate. That is our relationship, of course. But also, what we're going to get from sports in 2020. I'll explain that, plus what's it like to be Michael Jordan's kid, coming up in just a moment here on the Will Cain Show. I had a power surge. It was only like a blip, a second. Power down, power up. And I knew I was in trouble. I was scrambling through that entire segment trying to get back in touch with the guys. I will tell you this, it must have gone decently well. I got this text, big fan of this guy. He says, just got in the car after finishing up at work, and I got to tell you, this is the best Will Cain Show I've ever heard. I can't put my finger on what's different, but I'm liking the changes. Keep it up. So, Bubba, Pat, you crushed the interview.
And yeah, we're coming for your job, buddy.
Bubba and Pat Show coming soon to radio airwaves near you. On a 1 to 10 scale, 10 being you just absolutely sent it, not just over the fence, but out of the park. How'd you guys do in that interview with Ramona Shelburne?
Well, resets, I'd say, were 10 out of 10. I mean, I killed the resets. Question-wise, I think we could probably improve a little bit. So there's room for improvement. Overall, though, we crushed it.
Say solid 7.5.
I heard. I dialed
in.
I mean,
we were thrown into the fire there. We had no idea. I was resetting, doing live reads, doing teases. Pat's coming up with questions, you know, on the spot mm-hmm. here. Mm-hmm. And Ramona, you know, was great too. She rolled with it. We had a great mm-hmm. time.
I heard Pat asking her about that poll comparing LeBron to Jordan.
So yeah, I mean, if you need to drop, just drop. I mean, it's fine.
Okay. I got to catch up on Almost Famous. I didn't finish it. It's 2 hours and 43 minutes. So I'll go do that. You guys
fake
go ahead
news.
And finish this off. We'll vote on the best road trip movies. That's coming up. And a little bit here on the Will Cain Show. I doubt Almost Famous is going to win. But we will vote. It'll have a shot. That's coming up a little bit later here on the Will Cain Show. I mentioned what's it like to be Michael Jordan's kid. They showed up in just a moment, his daughter and two of his sons. And I'm telling you, I've done some of these long-form things, not 10 hours, mind you, but a 10-minute piece on Outside the Lines or E60, and you sit down for an hour when you interview people. I'm telling you. So I don't know how long they talked to Michael Jordan's kids, but it only made 15 seconds into the documentary. But they did appear on Good Morning America this morning. And I wanted to hear a little bit about what it's like to be Michael Jordan's kids. First, Jeffrey Jordan. He's Michael Jordan's son. This is what it's like Michael Jordan at home. Maybe as compared to Michael Jordan at the practice facility with his teammates?
Yeah, he was tough. You know, it was competitive, and we always felt like the competitive atmosphere, you know, shaped us in a way that was for the better. I mean, got us prepared for what we were going to face in the real world. So, you know, we embraced it, but it was definitely on. The switch was on most of the time for us.
I like that. The switch was on. That's what I'd say. My switch is on. One of my kids the other day said, "Dad is intense." Yeah, that's a good word. I'm on. I'm going to say it that way, son. I'm not intense. My switch is on, like Jordan. It's got to be hard, really, honestly. Can you imagine, especially if you play basketball, being the son of Michael Jordan? Like, impossibly hard. Like, terribly hard. Jasmine Jordan, his daughter, was also on Good Morning America. She said it's eye-opening. Like, they saw parts of their father that they hadn't seen. They young enough that it's kind of a golden-toned, sepia-toned, nostalgic memory in their life. But they learned things about their dad that they didn't even know. Listen to this.
It's been eye-opening. I was so young at the time, so now I'm actually seeing, like, okay, this is what was going on around me, and now I'm understanding, you know, the chaos and everything that was happening. So it's been a joy, really, to watch, and I think, like everybody else, we're sad that it's over.
You know, I'm not being facetious here. I would sign up for a 10-part documentary series on what it's like to be the child of, like, not a little famous, but astronomically legendary famous. I would really like to know what that's like. Who would you get for that documentary? Michael Jordan's kids. One day we'll have to hear from Tiger Woods' kids as well. The children of presidents. Michael Jackson's kids. Yes. That's a different level of growing up, different level of expectation and standard. I like to know what that's like. So there was the Jordan kids on Good Morning America this morning. We had sports return this weekend, and I watched the Bundesliga. And I thought it was fascinating how you could hear the scream, the yell, the instructions of every single player on the field. I liked it. I liked not having fans in the stands. Here's my two takeaways. Number one, we're going to have a much more intimate view of sports in 2020. I'm looking forward to hearing basketball players bark instructions at each other. The squeak of the sneaker on the court. The clang of the ball on the rim. The hits. Can you imagine the hits in football? I mean, sports is also an auditory experience, and we've lost a lot of that with high-definition television and crowd noise and fake crowd noise pumped in. That's number two. Let's not pump crowd noise in. Let's not do that. Joe Buck of Fox Sports said it's almost a given now that crowd noise will be pumped in to football to simulate it. Speaking of simulation, did y'all see in the South Korean soccer league, they simulated fans, but not with like holograms or virtual fans, but with sex dolls. Mm-hmm. It's true. I don't really know how you arrive at that conclusion, how that decision gets made. Y'all want to like superimpose them? You want to do cardboard cutouts? I say we do sex dolls. Good idea, Bob.
Yeah, what kind of simulations are you talking about?
You know what I'm talking about. I bet you I can do that. The, you know, like green screen the fans, the stands, you know? And then, you know, the same way they do like all that fancy stuff on ESPN. What do you call that? Sports science and all those things they do where they walk around on a green screen and before you know it, there's things happening that aren't really there. Anyway, you know what I'm getting at.
Sex dolls, right.
Sex dolls, that's what I'm talking about. Weston McKennie, he's an American. He plays for Schalke, or Schalke, or however you say it. He talked about, with Taylor Twellman, what it's like to play with no fans in the stands.
It was awkward. It felt like soccer, but it didn't feel like soccer at the same time. No fans, not really an atmosphere. You kind of have to really depend on your self-motivation and your self-drive, you know, to really give your 100% in the game. Obviously, we took a big L on this past weekend, the Riviera Derby. So in that game, you could really tell that we been out of it for quite a long time. As of right now, we're just going with the flow and how everything is and trying to take it step by step.
It's what it's like to play soccer with no fans in the stands. I'm looking forward to it. I think there is going to be an enjoyable experience to come out of this. Intimacy. Like going to a youth sporting event, hearing every cheer, every instruction, every coach's yell, every teammate talking to each other. I think we're going to have to figure out the cuss words thing. I don't know how we're going to do that. Dumping it like we do on radio? Not time to beep it out. I'm not sure. But I think it can make for an interesting, intimate sporting experience. Let's not pump fake crowd noise into the stadium to ruin it. Coming up, what's the best road trip movie? We vote on that next on The Will Cain Show.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your baby to let you sleep in?
What? We could sleep in another half hour? Thanks, sweetheart. And you'll change yourself too?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
All right, we've watched all 10 episodes of The Last Dance. You remember after the first weekend, after the first two episodes, remember the easy conclusion? Jerry Krause, that's the villain behind this story. Now that we've seen the whole thing, does it hold up? Is that true? It's The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. We'll get to how much blame does Jerry Krause shoulder for the end of that dynasty versus Phil Jackson versus Michael Jordan versus Jerry Reinsdorf. That's coming up a little bit later here on The Will Cain Show. But we did our homework. The assignment was road trip movies. Watched them over the weekend. The nominations were as follows. Will, Tommy Boy, Mike A., Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Pat, Joe Dirt, Bubba, Almost Famous, and Nuno, Dumb and Dumber. In the first hour of The Will Cain Show, we voted on who got last place. And by a margin of 3-2, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles got last place. Sad, Mike A.
This was just so upsetting to me. And it's not even that I lost. I can accept the loss. I'm kind of used to it. But Joe Dirt, fellas, think about what we're doing. Think about who we are as people. Joe Dirt didn't finish in last place. Think about that. Will voted the right way. Will understood. Pat is terrible. Pat always picks the worst. I don't expect much from him. Bubba said he liked the movie before the weekend, so I didn't have much hope. But Nuno. Oh, Supreme Leader, what have you done? And then I texted him that I was upset with the pick. I used some very choice language, which I can't say on the air. And he said back, it had hot chicks in it.
Well, it did.
That was his reason for Joe Dirt. And guys, we live in the internet age. You want a hot chick, you can look anywhere.
Mike, I'm going to give
upset.
You three reasons.
I'm upset
you,
by
I'm going to give you three mistakes you made, okay? Here's the three. Two of them are why Pat didn't get last. One of them is on you. The reasons Pat didn't get last work like this. Number one, Jamie Priestley. And number two, Brittany Daniel.
Yep.
That's why he didn't get last place.
Okay? You're welcome.
And all right, Brittany Daniel came as a real surprise to me. I didn't even know she existed, but I did after watching Joe Dirt. And
you should watch Always Sunny in Philadelphia. She's on there.
Yeah? Is it her or her twin sister?
It's her.
Okay. And then the third reason is this, Mike, and this one's on you. You drafted poorly. You were never going to win with Planes, Trains. You weren't going to. So what you did is you put yourself in a position where you could only lose. I didn't think you would. I thought you'd come in like third or fourth. But you left Vacation on the board. You left Smokey and
I was
the
happy
Bandit
with third or
board.
Fourth. I was happy with third or fourth.
But this is the anyway. Lesson in life. What you did is you left the floor but lowered your own ceiling. If the floor is going to be there, you might as well raise the ceiling. The ceiling's the roof, Mike.
Listen, I'm just upset. I'm just upset with Nuno. That's really what it comes down to. I expect no better
from Pat. The film didn't hold up.
Your movie wasn't funny. It wasn't good.
Joe Dirt, Mike. Pat. That's my
Look
response
it this way,
to Joe
Mike.
Dirt.
You will be drafting first next week, so congratulations.
Yes. And I'm going to punish you guys. I'm going to punish you.
Whoa.
Yes. Requiem for a Dream is getting picked. I don't care what the topic is.
Okay, let's find out what the topic is, and we're going to find out by finding out who won road trip movies. Okay.
Can we all say we know who finished third?
Third, yes. We can all say who finished third. You
it's
do that
Almost
quick?
Famous.
It's Almost Famous. That's correct.
Yep.
Yes. You agree, Pat?
Yeah, I'm right there, too.
It didn't win. It's definitely
disagree.
Outside the top two.
It was better than I thought it was going to be. I
disagree.
Think that was my biggest takeaway.
Bubba, you would vote your own. You would really vote Almost Famous first or second?
I would.
All right. Well, let's
I would have voted
vote,
it fourth.
Bubba. Let's get your vote, Bubba. Go ahead. Get on the record.
Yeah. I mean, I think, as I said earlier, I thought Tommy Boy did not hold up as much as I hoped. So that to me was his third. I thought the first 30 minutes were very fun. All right. The grill over here. Grill Master General.
Yeah, I got the grill going.
First 30 minutes of Tommy Boy, I thought were really funny. Then it just was, Then it, to me, came down to Dumb and Dumber versus Almost Famous. But I think Almost Famous is an unbelievable story. It's more or less a true story. Cameron Crowe, he was on the road at age 16 with the Allman Brothers. That's unbelievable. Dwayne Allman's the person who jumped off the roof. That really happened. Almost Famous is a good movie. It's the best road trip movie. I'm taking Almost Famous.
Okay.
Dumb and Dumber, slightly at number two.
That was such a wasted vote. It's not honest. It's not an honest vote.
It was the best movie. It was the best movie.
No, it wasn't.
Okay. All right.
It was fourth place for me.
Okay, go ahead. Let's get you on the record, Mike. What got first place?
Listen. Tommy Boy did not hold up as well as I remember it. Dumb and Dumber still had every single laugh. It's Dumb and Dumber's. Dumb and Dumber for the win.
All right. Pat, what got first place, your vote?
I hate to do this because it's a Nuno, but yeah, Dumb and Dumber.
Wow. He's already got two votes, right? This is going to require both me and Nuno to vote.
And we all know Nuno picks himself.
For Almost Famous or something else. What if we had a 2-2-1? That would be really. I guess we go to the phones like we did that one time. I'm going to go ahead and vote. I'm going to tell you my nominee, Tommy Boy, was far and away second place. You're right. It did not hold up as much as I thought. I think I definitely have the vote of integrity. Mike, you said that about me last week. I have done this on several occasions.
I 100% agree.
I do not. Yeah. Is that really your grill I'm listening to?
Are we keeping you from like a cheeseburger?
Yes, sir.
What's happening?
You want a burger?
Are you cooking burgers right now?
Hey, man. Listen, we were supposed to do this at 5:15.
It's burgers?
It's burgers and dogs. I got the kids, man. It's my kid's birthday.
It's good.
Happy birthday.
I'll tell you what, Tommy Boy, you're right. It didn't hold up the same way. I am voting not Almost Famous. I'm voting Dumb and Dumber, number one. There's a win for Nuno, his first. You don't even have to vote, Nuno. You already got it. Three. Which way would you have voted? Don't act like you have integrity now. You're going to vote for yourself. We all know it.
No, I actually went back and forth because I didn't enjoy, and I do enjoy Tommy Boy, but overall, I think Dumb and Dumber is the best out of all the five that we watched this weekend.
There you go, by 4-1, because Bubba voted Almost Famous. Dumb and Dumber, best road trip movie. And Nuno gets his first win of the year.
What's the category going to be?
He's first on the board.
What is it going to be?
Best Portuguese
best
movies?
He just said subtitles.
Best foreign language?
Hear that?
Best soccer movies?
What are the
Ladybug
odds? Ladybug
would win no matter what.
Best dictator movies?
Yeah, there's so many good categories for you to pick from, Nuno. Yeah, subtitled, foreign language, soccer movies, movies about authoritarian figures. Congratulations. There he is. Nuno, your winner of Best Road Trip Movie with Dumb and Dumber. Congratulations, Nuno.
I hate you, Nuno.
Oh, big golf, son. All right. Well, see you later.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
There's no doubt this was all boiling up on Jordan to a point where he just wanted to kind of get away from the game and walk away from the game for a while.
The most emotional Michael was when he was talking about why he wanted to win so bad.
I left these episodes seeing MJ and what drives him a little more clearly.
This was the most human I felt we saw Michael Jordan through this entire time.
Jordan never challenged anybody to do something he wouldn't do himself.
Now that we've seen all 10 episodes, was the original conclusion, the conversation after the first two episodes, that it's all Jerry Krause's fault, and he was the evil villain behind the end of the Chicago Bulls dynasty? Was it true? Did it hold up? Say the way that Dumb and Dumber does, as best road trip movie of all time? We'll revisit that in just a moment here on The Will Cain Show. But I asked that question after the first two episodes. It was all too convenient. Everybody showed up on First Take and Get Up and ESPN and Fox and said, oh, Jerry Krause, his ego got in the way. Oh, it's always the way the dynasty's in. And oh, he just wanted more credit. But it didn't totally add up, mostly because it was too easy. It was too simple. There was too obvious a figure to point at behind the scenes as the nefarious villain who killed what we loved. Now that we've seen all 10 episodes, I think it's clear Jerry Krause did play a role in ending the Chicago Bulls dynasty. But he wasn't alone. And I'm not even sure he shoulders the lion's share of the blame. What we know now is that that thing was coming to an end regardless of Jerry Krause's decision. Yes, it's true. Every dynasty does end at the altar of ego. Ego plays a rule, plays a role. And it wasn't just Jerry Krause's ego. It was Michael Jordan's. It was Phil Jackson's. It was certainly Scottie Pippen's. People who either weren't getting enough credit or enough money for their contribution to the dynasty. There's no doubt that Jerry Krause's ego was part of that equation. He just simply was not alone. Beyond ego, there was injury and age. Was this team one that could bring it all back together? Rodman was on his last legs. Rodman, that final season, had diminishing returns. And after that final season, didn't have much more to add to his NBA career. Even Pippen tailed off fairly significantly after his Bulls run. Look what happened with him and the Rockets and that career and the direction it went. Michael Jordan as well. The next time we saw Michael Jordan was as a Washington Wizard. So Jerry Krause wasn't wrong that the team was aging. It wasn't as good as it had once been, and it felt like it was being kept together with duct tape and spit. And then there is Jerry Reinsdorf. There is the owner and the ability to set a course for an organization. Ramona Shelburne, who was on the show earlier, and I've taken a poll of executives at ESPN, and from what I understand, the Bubba and Pat show was a resounding success. The interview got high marks, roughly an 8 rating on a 10-point scale, and so you should watch for the Bubba and Pat show coming soon to a radio near you. But Ramona Shelburne was interviewed by Bubba and Pat separately. Here's what she had to say about Jerry Reinsdorf's ability to bring this team back together in 99.
I think what everybody wants to know from Reinsdorf, like, did this really have to be the last dance? Could you have done anything different to change things? Could you have fired Jerry? Could you have stepped in? Could you have gotten Phil and Krause to back on the same page? Could you have paid Scottie Pippen? And he tried. He actually did. He went to Michael Jordan after the season and said, hey, Michael, you know, we've done this before. This is 3 in a row. I know what the team wants to defend the title. Everybody's a year older. I know this felt like the last dance and all that, but don't give me your answer right now. We're at the beginning of the lockout. Let me work on Phil. I don't know how long this is going to last. It could be months. It ended up being all the way into the next year. Let me just see if I can get Phil. And Michael said, okay, you know what? If you can get Phil, I'm in.
But Jerry Reinsdorf could not get Phil. Did Jerry Krause really deserve the lion's share of the blame, all of the blame, and why this fell apart? Or is it on Jordan? Is it on Jackson? Is it on Reinsdorf? I'm going to give you the name exactly of who I think shoulders most of the blame for the end of the Chicago Bulls dynasty in just a moment. But I want to pick up on our bump in music and the vote we just took for the best road trip movie. Dumb and Dumber won. But Bubba nominated Almost Famous. And I will say, Bubba, you said it was a true story. It wasn't totally a true story. I did go to the internet and research Almost Famous afterwards. I wanted to see who it was that the band in Almost Famous was supposed to be in the real life.
Well, you based on a true
Brothers
story, yeah.
What I read was it was a composite of several things.
Correct.
But the Allman Brothers were a big inspiration for that, and that, what was his name, Billy Crudup's character, I can't remember, but he was based on, was it Greg Allman?
I'm assuming Dwayne.
Dwayne Allman?
Because Dwayne is the person who jumped, Dwayne Allman jumped off the thing in real life, the roof. But Cameron Crowe, when he was 16 in real life, traveled with the Allman Brothers for 3 weeks. So that really happened. Then he also went on tour with Led Zeppelin, the Eagles, and Lynyrd Skynyrd. And, yeah, it's a composite of that. And it's made up. Stillwater is a real band, but they're not really popular. So this, it's
they
a composite
that
of that. Yeah, they all put it all together. So that's what I meant by a real story, which I think is, you know, unbelievable for a 16-year-old kid to be doing that. 3 minutes,
sir. But what I wanted to know, Bubba, is this, and I wondered if you could answer it. Did Cameron Crowe's piece in real life, like his big debut for Rolling Stone or whoever, or that the movie was based on, did he destroy the Allman Brothers or whoever it was? Did he publish a highly critical piece that they thought was going to ruin the band, kind of like what happened in Almost Famous?
I'm not sure. No, I don't know exactly how that went. I mean, I know his stuff was published, so I can't answer that specifically.
Well, what I found interesting about that is, like, that's the whole struggle for the characters. Does he tell the truth? Does he be honest? Does he show how narcissistic and shallow these guys were in real life? Or does he want to be their friends and get more pieces and access? And I wondered what happened in the real world. Did he say that about the Led Zeppelin or Allman Brothers or whoever, that they were kind of shallow and narcissistic as well and not really about the music but the fans? I wondered who that was in the real world, because that's certainly what was implicated in this movie. But if we don't know, we don't know. So who gets the lion's share of the blame? Back to The Last Dance. I agree with what Zach Lowe, the host of the Low Post podcast, said on Get Up. Bottom line in the end, the buck stops with leadership. Listen to this.
The focus is on Jerry Krause, the whole series from the first episode. But I wonder if Jerry Reinsdorf steps in and says, hey, look, Jerry Krause, you and Phil are untenable. Guess what? You lose. You get to keep your job, but I'm overruling you. Phil, here's a 1 year, $10 million check to come back as coach. Phil then wins the power struggle. I wonder if that, at least for Phil, makes the situation tenable to survive a year. And I agree with Jackie. You bring that team back. Yeah, they're aging. They're tired. They're mentally exhausted. Who's beating them? Who's beating that team? I don't know I don't know if anyone's beating that team. And I would have liked to see it have another shot. And I think having Jerry Reinsdorf get the last word last night put a lot of the blame where it should have been and where it wasn't in the first two episodes. And that's on the guy that has the ultimate authority and responsibility for the team. And that's the owner.
I totally agree. The lion's share of the blame should be not with Jerry Krause, but should be with Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner of the Chicago Bulls. He's the leader. He's the one that makes the ultimate decision. And the fact that that franchise at the end of six championships didn't have direction on rebuild or bring it back lies at his feet. The lion's share of the blame belongs with a different Jerry, Jerry Reinsdorf.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to The Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.